Good evening and welcome to This Week in Football from the makers of Low Limit Football on the Beyond the Pitch and FNX Media Networks. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight we continue our 2019 Copa America preview series as we preview Qatar, the 2019 Asian Cup champions. Joining me as always, my co-host, Mr. Roberto Rojas, and Middle Eastern football journalist, Shoaib Ahmed. Gentlemen, thank you both for joining me tonight. Shoaib, I want to start with you first because the last time we spoke, we previewed Saudi Arabia for the World Cup. This time it's Qatar, another Middle Eastern country and a Middle Eastern country in terms of footballing that's really on the rise. I'd like to know your ties to Qatari football.
Yeah, sure. Firstly, you know, guys, thank you for bringing me back on the show. Really appreciate it. You guys are doing like an amazing job. So while I might not be directly involved with Qatar, you know, taking a few steps just to understand the nation or whatnot, right? If you live in the Middle East, right, you probably know someone who lives in Qatar, right? Like maybe family member, maybe close friends and so on, just because of the proximity of the nation to other Middle Eastern countries. In my case, I sort of know a few family members, close family members that live there. Now, before 2017, life was good, right? When you think about it, like everything was good. All the nations, all the Middle Eastern countries were, you know, in sync with each other. When one does one thing, the other follows and so on. Like a little bit of brotherhood, right? Mm-hmm. Post 2017, when the GCC crisis took into effect, everything changed. And that's still the situation right now. Right. For example, if you have to fly from Dubai in UAE to Doha in Qatar, it will take you less than an hour. Right. But now you cannot fly directly to Doha. You would have to fly into one of the neutral countries, which is Oman or Kuwait, and then fly into Doha. The three countries that have restricted their ties with or cut off their ties with Qatar are Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, and United Arab Emirates. So that in itself has placed a significant impact. You know, I know this is like in general, but it also impacts from a football perspective because, you know, earlier this year I was in UAE covering the Asian Cup. And of course, the winners were Qatar, unexpectedly. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you've heard about it. I don't know if you've noticed. There was not Qatar won the Asian Cup with no fans. No fans because they were not allowed to come in, right? Except for the fact that there was a Chinese girl and a South Korean girl who were supporting Qatar in their section of the in the section of the stands, right? And then they had like a few rogue fans from Oman who showed up because, you know, these guys are playing good and no one is there except for this Chinese and the South Korean girls. So you would see like a bunch of Omani fans as well. So that's the impact that's happened like from a GCC political perspective. And of course, if you take a look back into how Qatar has performed in recent years, they're doing significantly well. As compared to what happened yesterday, that was a little shocking where they lost 4-0 to Nigeria in the U20 World Cup. But yeah, that's basically the overall situation in Qatar.
It's kind of been, it's interesting that you mentioned that of how geopolitical it has been for Qatar, as well as, you know, how it affects essentially the football perspective. So, you know, heading into this, I mean, it's kind of interesting that you kind of put into all this into perspective, Shoaib. So now looking into this Qatari team and I think the country in general, how are they viewing this particular Copa America? Because it's the first time that a team like Qatar is participating in a historical tournament. You know, we've had the tournament has had a lot of invitees in the Copa America. We can go back to Mexico, Japan, Honduras, Costa Rica. You know, Japan will be in this tournament as well. with Qatar. So it's just, Shoaib, from what you've been able to understand, at least from, you know, speaking to fans or those that are that is involved in Qatari football, what is the vibe heading into this particular Copa America, especially coming up of as a winning the Asian Cup, as you said, essentially without any fans, and of course for them to prepare to host the big one, which is the World Cup in 2022.
Absolutely. Like, for them right now, the fact that they entered the Copa America is a win already. It doesn't matter. The results don't matter, right? The reason I say that is, I mean, some might argue that their entry into the tournament could have been because of the fact that Qatar has started sponsoring a lot of, I mean, they obviously sponsor CONMEBOL, but, you know, they sponsor some of the few of the South American teams too. So people from Middle East who have no allegiance to Qatar anymore would say that they basically bought themselves into this, right? Which, to a certain aspect, could, you know, could be true. No assumptions, right? But at the same time, if you're looking at a football perspective, this is absolutely the best way to move forward for Qatar to play against teams like Paraguay, Colombia, and Argentina. I mean, who, you know, if you play against these teams, you're basically trying to improve yourself, right? When you match these teams on paper, I mean, obviously the South American teams are stronger, you know, than Qatar. But the way I see it, given, like, you know, how things have turned up in the last World Cup and results as of late, it seems like everything is equal, right? I can't say that, you know, oh, Brazil is going to win this, Argentina is going to win this, Colombia is going to win this, you know? It seems like it's quite open for any team to take.
I would agree with you. You know, and looking forward, based on their success in the 2019 Asian Cup, obviously winning that tournament, massive performance. They went undefeated, 7 wins, no draws, no losses. They only conceded 1 goal. They scored 19. They eliminated Saudi Arabia. They eliminated South Korea. They eliminated the hosts in UAE. They eliminated Japan 3-1 in the final. This was not an easy road for this Qatari team. So you would have to say that going into this tournament, this is probably the most battle-tested, because that final, the Asian Cup final, was February 1st. So moving forward, the main storyline here for Qatar in this tournament, you know, especially when you look at Felix Sanchez-Bas and what he wants to do with this team, what are your expectations of how he will line this team up, how he will move forward in what is considered a much tougher tournament now with, like you said, the likes of Brazil, Argentina, Colombia, and a host of other nations that have some serious talent here?
You know, the biggest thing over here is Qatar is or has been one of the countries, one of the topmost countries in the Middle East to take that approach of grassroots seriously, right? Because if you look at, like, Felix Bass's time in Qatar, he joined from Barcelona's youth academy. He joined the Aspire Academy, Qatar's Aspire Academy, in 2006. When Aspire Academy came into being, people were just assuming that, you know, this will just go on for a few years and then drop off like everything else that happens in the Middle East, right? But they focused on the grassroots. Since 2006, you would never hear of the Qatari senior national team making men's in the footballing world, right? It only happened, let's say, 2019, actually, to be honest, you know, after they won the Asian Cup. But you have to look at the history from 2006 to 2019. Felix Bass has remained as, you know, the way he moved up, U16, U19, U23, and then he got, you know, promoted to the senior side. So there is that consistency, that momentum already set. And the fact that he was part of the Aspire Academy, part of the Qatari under-national team, he had access to these players playing together in, you know, at the lower age groups, even before most Middle Eastern countries would ever think of, right? And the way they ended up in the Asian Cup, I personally wouldn't imagine, or anyone wouldn't imagine Qatar to take it. It would, you know, it was obviously Japan or South Korea. But the way they played their first game, absolutely shocking. Absolutely shocking in the sense that, wow, Qatar actually played a football game. Like, everything was in sync. The players, you know, the passing was tight. The players played for each other. Perhaps that notion of, you know, playing in a hostile country helped that mentality. I don't know, but the fact that they played, you know, brilliantly across each and every game, like from the strikers all the way through the defense, right? Everything was just in sync. And if you look at the average age of the team, it's just 24 or 25, you know. The most capped player, Hassan Al-Haidos, is 28. He played 117 games. That's a goal in itself. That's like, that's massive. And the person who won the Asian Golden Boot and Asian MVP player of the tournament, Al-Moiz Ali, he's 22. He's just 22, and he scored 9 goals in the Asian Cup. And I don't know if you saw the finals against Japan, the goal he scored, it was a super bicycle kick. Who does that at 22, you know, in a final, right? I mean, I know he's a striker, he gets paid to do that, but, you know the excitement there, so.
So, yeah, you kind of mentioned, and I do remember that final. That was an amazing goal by Amez Ali. I mean, it's going to be interesting heading into this group, now heading into the group preview, because I think we could both say this now. I think in 2019, you know, the fact that a lot of these teams are familiar with each other, Argentina, Paraguay, Colombia, I'm assuming, given that they have done their knowledge, they have studied this Qatar team, and they're not going to look at the team who, you know, just won the Asian Cup and whatnot, you know, that they're actually studying, like, film on the team, you know, how they play, like you mentioned, Shuaib, you know, the fact that they've been so tactically disciplined and free-flowing. So they definitely have to really, really focus on trying to get maximum points against Qatar. But on the Qatar perspective, how are they viewing this particular group? You know, taking on, obviously, the powerhouse in Argentina, you know, with Lionel Messi, a Colombia team that obviously made it to the round of 16 and are one of the biggest teams in South America, and a Paraguayan team that are looking to go back to their previous form. You know, obviously, you would think that they would be the whipping boys of this group, but, you know, is there that slight possibility, at least from the Qatari perspective, of them to actually cause a shock against one of these teams? And if so, who is that team that they could cause a shock? And if it's not that kind of case, what do you think is the perspective and you know, the idea of the goal, I would say, heading into this particular group for this Copa America?
See, I personally believe that Qatar will always consider themselves, you know, coming to this tournament, they'll always consider themselves as the underdogs, right? So for them, it doesn't matter if they lose, to be honest. But the fact that they get to put their players in front of, you know, their South American counterparts, it's, like I said, it's a win for themselves. Because, you know, in the end, it's all about testing the players against different opponents, right? In the past, what's happened with Qatar is that they would always play friendlies against, you know, teams like Estonia, Georgia, you know, not the stronger teams, you know what I mean? Or even the Asian teams like Jordan, Lebanon, Iraq, and so on, right? But to play against the likes of, you know, Paraguay, Colombia, Argentina, and they actually have a pre-tournament friendly with Brazil, this is huge for them. This is huge for Felix Bass, where he can actually compare and see the team's performance prior to the World Cup, you know, see what needs to be fixed, you know, how they need to play. And to be honest, like I said, you know, I don't see any of these teams as some team that could take the, or either one of these teams, like either one of the South American teams to take the Copa America, right? And like I said, it's all equal on paper. And I have a feeling that Qatar will not be an easy team to beat. While they might be underdogs and while they might be, you know, it might be a new environment to them to play in South America. For them, imagine if you're going into this game feeling that, you know what, I don't have anything to lose. The fact that I'm here, I'm already, you know, this is amazing. And then you're playing with that mentality, things could change, you know, things could turn for the positive for Qatar.
For sure.
You know, against which team, I'm not sure, but it could happen. Again, it could happen against any of these three teams, to be honest.
Absolutely. And, you know, Joan, I guess I'll pose the same question to you. I mean, you know, if you had to pick a team that perhaps could indeed slip up against this Qatari side, who, you know, who could indeed cause a surprise, as Swave has said, which one could it be? And, you know, how big of a shock would that be? Not even from their perspective, but also for the entire tournament itself.
Well, you know, I start by looking at the other three teams and I see coaching situations, right? We look at Argentina and the change in head coach. Colombia's done the same. Paraguay has had a most recent change in head coach. So I think the ability to focus those teams to the task at hand is going to become an issue where Qatar does not have that issue. Qatar has a stable coach, someone that's been in the system for years. And I think from that standpoint, I think Qatar could actually, you know, overturn the apple cart on any of the three teams because they are the most recently battle tested in terms of having to play competitive matches just a couple months ago and a prestigious competitive match. So I think they're the most battle tested. Everyone else has only played friendlies. So for me, and also, you know, to further Schwabe's point and something that I want to talk about in a few minutes, the youth of the team, a younger team, a quicker team, is something that is going to be difficult for some of the older clubs, even Argentina that's starting to get a little older, going to be something difficult to happen to handle. So I think, though, for me, Qatar's best chance is, and Rob, I know you don't want to hear this, but it's probably that first match against Paraguay, because again, it's another younger side. Right. It's a younger team, but it's going to be a younger team that has had the coaching change where there's been stability in the Qatari system now for quite some time. So I think that the possibility to overturn the apple cart the most exists in that first match against Paraguay. But I think Qatar, you know, although it would certainly be unexpected from the South American point of view, I think Qatar actually has an opportunity to overturn at least one, if not more than one team in this group. And I don't think they're going to be a complete pushover, but I think they might challenge for one of those knockout stage positions going forward in the tournament. There's certainly a possibility that they could do that. So I think it's going to be on the youth of the Qatari team to be able to kind of press the issue with some of these teams and calling from their recent experience of running through a tournament all the way start to finish, that they're going to be able to use that. So, and Shweb, I want to kind of jump into you to look at some players to watch. I know you had already mentioned Almuez Ali. You had mentioned Hassan Aliados. I want to talk about Saad Al-Sheib, because he is their goalkeeper, won the Golden Glove in this in the Asian Cup tournament. And, you know, by math standards, he's one of the most experienced players on this team at 28 years of age. What does he bring to the team, especially for some of us that might not have seen some of these players, because they're mainly based, the entire team's mainly based in Qatar?
No, I totally understand. And the thing is, with Saad Al-Sheib, I mean, yes, you know, he's 28 and he's been like the rock for the team. In the Asian Cup, I feel like he has not really been tested, you know, because the team was just too strong, you know, for rest of the teams to actually get past the defense, right? Yes, he made a few saves here and there, but again, I don't think it was anything crazy, especially, you know, when you think about what happened like a few, last week, actually, when they played Persepolis, when Al Saad played Iranian Persepolis in the Asian Champions League, right? They lost 2-0, and that was Zavi's last game. So it's a little iffy right there. His performances have not been up to par in terms of post-Asian Cup. But then again, they have gone on to win the team has gone on to win the Qatari League, Qatari title. They also lost. You have to keep in mind that they also lost in the cup game, which is huge in Middle East. Any of the cup games are super huge because, you know, the actual president, the president or the king, the royalty act, comes to the stadium to watch, you know, and there's a lot of money involved in the cup games, and they lost to Duhail. It's not been an easy ride for him as of late. And I wouldn't be surprised if the other two keepers, either one of them, get a shot to start, right? But like you said, you know, Al-Shib is the one that's that has or that comes into the books with a lot of experience, and he's 28. He knows how to how to handle the pressure against top teams.
Now, I wanna take this from the, you know, older, experienced player, although calling some 28-year-old older is kind of a misnomer, to the youngest player, and from what I can see, is a player that is the only player that I can find that is not based in Qatar right now, and he was added to the final squad because of Khaled Mohammed's injury, and that is, I'm sorry. It was Ahmed Moin's injury, and it's Khaled Mohammed, 18-year-old, who's based over in Spain at Cultura Leonesa. Does he have a chance of making this team? I know he didn't make any appearances, but obviously this is part of the youth system that is part of Qatar. I mean, we're looking at 21-year-olds, 22-year-olds littered up and down the roster here. I know you have a provisional roster. Is he somebody that's going to make the provisional roster? Or did he make the provisional roster? Or who do we see as a young player that maybe did not play or maybe did not shine in the Asian Cup that could potentially shine in this tournament?
Yeah, unfortunately, he did not make it, right? It sort of makes sense because he's just 18 and I don't think he gets a lot of playing time at Leonesa. But I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he actually comes through before the World Cup, though, because scouts have good things to say. Even the last thing I heard about his coach, not the main coach at Leonesa, but one of the assistant coaches or the youth coaches, had good things to say about his work ethic. That said, again, I would, you know, count. For me, this would be a test of how the strikers play against the South American defense, right? And the two strikers would be Al-Muiz Ali and Akram Afif. And as you might be aware, that both of them had stints. They started off at Aspire Academy. Well, they started off at, you know, youth academies within Saudi, then got pushed into the Aspire Academy, and then they moved on to play in Europe with the with Belgian side, UPenn. Akram Afif was, you know, he was loaned out to Villarreal, played for youth team in Sevilla. So they come with, you know, at the age of 22, they still have like a decent experience from a Middle Eastern perspective, right? And Akram Afif, he's technically adept. Like if he gets on the ball, I don't want to say he's some Messi or whatnot, but you know, I would sort of compare him with like Di Maria. You know, if he has a good day, he has a very good day. But yeah, like he has been on form for Al Sadd. Yes, the competition within Qatari League is not huge. You have the Algerian striker Baghdad Bounedjah for Al Sadd, who scored like more goals than Messi did last year or this year, I think, or in the entire season. But you know, the fact that they play on and off on a daily basis, actually, it's been strong for this team. But in terms of young players, I have the three that I would look at, or four that I would look at, would be both strikers, Afif and Moiz Ali, and then I would look at midfielder Bassem Al Ravi. This kid is 21, right? But whenever it comes to free kicks or set pieces, it's him that takes it. And he tends to score some crackers, right? He tends to have some good goals for a 21-year-old. He had some sort of an issue. There was an issue with his name, his ethnicity during the Asian Cup because he has roots in Iraq. And, you know, of course, when Qatar won, there was calls of him not fulfilling his residency obligations with the nation before getting the nationality, right? But that keeping aside, everything is solved. All the answers, you know, all the paperwork has been worked out. But this kid is something I would say a midfielder to watch out for, Bassem Al Ravi. And then you have Asim Madibo, who is 22. you know, again, another person who's actually been naturalized. He, think of him as a version of Conte, right? Like the Chelsea player, right? He breaks up players. Again, I haven't seen any team. I've only been exposed to Middle Eastern teams in terms of, you know, watching them play day in and day out, right? And I haven't seen any team have a player like Madibo that breaks a play in the midfield, right? And he can cover a lot of distance. His stamina is like a rock. I mean, he just keeps on running. So it's going to be tough for, like you said, you know, for the older South American players, especially the midfield players to, you know, have him running around them.
So, Shoaib, I mean, obviously, you know, you've named some of the players, you know, you obviously named the kind of style that this team has played. But, you know, just going into predictions for our next segment, you know, from a Paraguayan perspective, from a Colombian perspective, from an Argentine perspective, you know, what is, you know, the the team that we're going to see, you know, what kind of perhaps lineup that we're going to see in this Copa America? What's something that we should expect from this Qatari team moving forward? And also, I think the big question, of course, here is, you know, if because of so many players that are playing in Qatar, you know, with the exception of Khalid Mohammed, who is in Spain, but did not make this provisional squad for the Copa America, you know, is there the slight possibility that coming off of a successful Asian Cup and if they do well in the Copa America, you know, get some sort of performance, perhaps from an individual or a team performance, that we could see some of these players play in one of Europe's top leagues or, you know, or a top five league in Europe sometime soon?
No, I have a feeling that, you know, most of these players, especially the younger ones, they have the potential to play. I mean, perhaps not in England where the game... England or Germany, where the game tends to be physical, but in, you know, I could see them play in Spain. I could see them play in Netherlands or even France, right? But the biggest issue over here, especially the Middle Eastern mindset, is, you know, most of the people that in the provisional lineup, most of the players that have been selected are from, of course, Al Sadd, right? One of the biggest teams, which has a lot of money. What happens in the case of Middle Eastern players is that they tend to get held back because of, you know, the lifestyle, because of the fact that, you know, life is comfortable, right? They're at home. There is no language barrier. You know, they play for a big club. There is a lot of money involved. It's all good. When they move to a European country, you know, while this might not be a serious situation for majority of the players all over the world, being homesick is a big issue, right? The ability to adapt to a more physical game than what you see in Qatar is an issue. For a simple example is if you watch the game in Middle East, right? If I have the ball as a midfielder, I will have a lot of space to run at a defender, right, or a person who's marking me. I could still have a lot of space to maneuver through him, or if I'm able to, in fact. Anywhere else, you don't get that space. You know, if you're man-marking someone, you're basically man, you're with that person. And if that, as soon as the person gets the ball, you're on top of him, right? So that's something that the Middle Eastern game is not used to. But what, according to what I've seen in the Asian Cup, Qatar has managed to circumvent that through pace. You know, like the midfield, again, Joe, you brought up a good point about this this team being young. You know, the ability to use that, they're agile, they're fast. Afif and Moise, they're pretty fast, right? And Moise is, like, he's a thin player. He's just lanky. But the fact that he can jump on cue, his vertical is pretty good, and, you know, he can win headers too, regardless of whether the, you know, like, think about it, like, imagine him playing against teams like Australia, even Japan for that. Japan has good defenders, right? And winning aerial duels against their defenders is huge, especially for, again, I harp on this, that, you know, the Middle Eastern countries are not physically built to play like against a physical team, right? That is changing. It's slowly changing, but they're still not there. But when it comes to technical, when it comes to working for each other, playing for each other, this is a lot. And, you know, if I have to sum this entire tournament up, or entire impact up for Qatar, it's the fact that everyone, especially their neighbors, who they relied on so much in the past, right? It's a sense of, you know, necessity for this team to prove themselves. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, FIFA just came out saying that that won't be, the World Cup won't be extended to any of the other neighboring nations, right? This is a win for Qatar, right? Now everyone will be looking at Qatar and saying, like, oh, Qatar can't host it, Qatar can't do anything. It's on this team, this set of players, to prove otherwise. Because if you play good football, and if you manage to make some sort of noise in Copa America, I would say, in a tournament that has Copa America, people will start taking Qatar seriously.
Very true. Very true. I want to look forward here to the tournament itself. And obviously, this Qatari team, coming off the Asian Cup win, now moving into a Copa America against what many would consider bigger competition, what would a Copa America win mean for the country of Qatar, especially given everything that's happened with them with their bid for the World Cup, given their rise to success in the Asian Cup? What would a Copa America title mean to them, especially in the same year they won the Asian Cup?
I am hoping, Roberto, coming back to your point, I'm hoping the first is the fact that the players get noticed for their talent, and not for talent in the sense, like, you know, some team comes knocking on the door to pick one of these talented players, right? Because in the past, what we see out of Middle East is that, you know, there will be a sponsor that sponsors teams like Manchester City. For just as an example, Manchester City, when they were sponsored, when Abu Dhabi came in as sponsors, they sent in Omar Abdulrahman because he's one of the top Emirati players, right? And obviously he was sent because of that connection to UAE or whatnot. Did he make it? No, right? But the fact that he came in, there was a lot of buzz. Manchester City got some exposure in the Middle East. This is, again, back in the day. Same thing with Qatar and Barcelona, right? Exposure from that perspective. Not that anyone went to Barcelona, but the fact that Afif went to Villarreal, he was on loan for Villarreal, that was huge. Did he play any significant impact, or did he have any significant impact? No. But I'm hoping that after Copa America, if they do well, at least one player should get the call to move to a European team, right? That's from a player's perspective. But from an entire team's perspective, go back to the point where I say that, you know, if this is a win, I hope, you know, countries like, mainly European countries, they start taking these, taking Qatar as a serious nation, and sort of move away from the fact that, you know, all the issues related to the World Cup and so on, that's a topic in itself, right? But I just hope that they're considered seriously. They're considered more seriously as a nation that plays football, and not just a nation that has money to buy football or buy their way into where they have reached so far.
And if they win the entire Copa America?
Oh, I'm moving to Qatar. Yeah, I'm moving to Qatar, preparing myself for the World Cup.
Yeah, I think you'll have to at that point, that's for sure. But great stuff, and it'll be interesting to see if any of these kids get snapped up by some of the European clubs. And I think that would be the next evolution of evolving the players and the nation in terms of their world footballing status. And I think that would be the next thing or the next step in preparing them for a 2022 World Cup where they would compete on the world stage. So, gentlemen, I'd like to thank you both for joining me tonight and helping me break down Qatar. So for Shoaib Ahmed and for Mr. Roberto Rojas, I am Joe Uccello. Thanks for listening to our preview and good night.